B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon.
E-class.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gordon Hayward gets the free throws. Tyreek Evans will dribble it into the front court, but the clock will hit triple zeros. And the Celtics don't steal one game. They steal two behind a truly epic franchise-carrying performance by Kyrie Irving tonight. 37 points as the Celtics, for the second straight game, come from double figures down, and they take a 2-0 lead in this best of seven with the Pacers. The final score, Boston 99, Indiana 91.
All right, hour three, Agenda Free Friday here. And I'm going to say here from Parts Unknown, where I'm coming to you from, Maz and Murray from our Star Market TD Garden broadcast studios in advance of Bruins. Game 5 tonight against the Leafs. Catch that on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Catch Celtics Pacers on our sister station, 105.7 WROR. What's your expectation tonight? Celtics, Maz. They're two home games against this crap bag opponent. Sean Grandy, the team broadcaster, says they stole. Like, they didn't deserve. Like, maybe not even the better team in those games. So what are your expectations now that they hit the road?
So I think stole is a little strong, but they didn't play great. They just, you know, they played when they wanted to. I just think they're so much better than Indiana. I refuse to give them credit, but maybe it's not credit, for stealing a game. But tonight, I mean, there is a little bit of a variable there. You're on the road, and I'll tell you what I worry about, because I just think the Celtics, I told you, they're gonna, if they lose one in Indiana, I'm not going to be shocked, okay? Because, you know, that's the way the NBA works, and let's face it, The league will intervene if it has to stretch out a series. So it wouldn't, given the fact that the game is in Indiana, it's 2-0, no Marcus Smart, it would not shock me if a key Celtic gets in a foul trouble early in that game tonight. And then we'll see what happens. But my overall opinion hasn't changed. If they lose both in Indiana, boy, what an indictment that is.
Oh, I know. I'm terrified about the next couple of games. I mean, I can totally see them losing to this Pacers team over the next couple of nights, and the worry will then seep in, and wow, we're tied 2-2, game five, big. No, please. They'll be down as much as 22 tonight at some point and still win by four.
Okay. Do the Celtics have something to prove to you on the road?
Yeah, to me they do. Again, this has been a garbage road team in the playoffs. And so there was that stat I saw today that they're 5-16 on the road, I think, under Stevens.
Yeah, so
and
let me give it to you.
Three of the wins were – okay, go ahead then. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. This is from the Globe this morning. Celtics are 5-16 on the road during the postseason since Steven took over as coach in 2013. 5-16. Three of those wins were over the eighth-seeded Bulls in 2016 and 17 after they lost the first two games of that series at home. That was the year that Isaiah Thomas lost his sister, and they Rondo went off in those first two games at the Garden, and then the Celtics, you know, Isaiah, you know, got right, and they, you know, rolled in that series. So since those wins at the United Center, the Celtics are 2-11 on the road in the playoffs, losing four times to LeBron James Cavaliers, three times at Milwaukee last year, three times against Washington, and once at Philadelphia. Their lone wins came at Cleveland when Marcus Smart hit 7 3-pointers in May of 17, and last year at Philadelphia when Al Horford in his late basket helped the Celtics claim a 3-0 lead. So since that Chicago series, 2-11 on the road under Brad Stevens.
I mean, really, so, like, what more do you need to know? It's horrendous.
They have something to prove on the road. The question is, Murray, do they prove anything by beating Indiana anywhere?
No. This is an exhibition series. The real playoffs begin when they play Milwaukee in round two.
Fake series. So it has been declared. Fake series. And I kind of stand with Murray on this. If this is one of these things, and it's a little unfair, but it happens. The Celtics can only lose, in my estimation, here. If they go out there and win both these games, it's... You know, look at Indiana. They don't have anybody.
But if
they lose, Murray, even if they split, but certainly if they lose both, oh, my God, do we hammer them?
Oh, yeah, no, of course. Yeah, no, they can't win. They can only lose with this. But I tell you, and I thought this, you know, after game one in both of these series, because at least in the first game between Brooklyn and the 76ers, that was real competitive, and Brooklyn stole that. We'd be learning a lot more about this Celtics team if they were playing the Nets in this first round. They're lucky that they got the draw that they did. They really are.
I mean, you know, really, as you say it too, right? 2-11, the 5-16 includes three wins against Three wins against the Bulls. They're gonna add a road win or two here. And this one, you just throw Indiana on the pile, too. It's another crap team. Like, it's just one crap team after the next. They need to be a good team on the road. Let's not forget, last year, they lost every game in Milwaukee.
Exactly. So, this is... But, so look, this is what I'll say. That they can't really show anything by winning. I'll take that back a little bit. If they win these games here in Indiana, after, the crappy regular season games, Maz... that they won. They were crappy teams, but they did go on the road a couple times there in the East and went on the road. It's a slow build. I wouldn't say that they flipped the switch or turned the page or a different team, but it's just sort of this slow build of them doing things that they haven't done to this point. And I'll give them, half credit for that. Half credit for that. But on balance, there's really only one way to go this weekend, and that's down. How about Kyrie Irving? He mentioned the other night what an honor it was to lace him up for the Boston Celtics in the playoffs. Is anyone taking the cheese on that? I'll just reset this because I know we did it yesterday. Murray, are you taking the cheese on that?
No, of course not. He's just feeding Celtics fans what they want right now because he's feeling good. He's in a good mood, and as his mood goes, they go. That's been the way it's been all season. Right now he's feeling good because he gets shine on the big stage of the playoffs. They're up 2-0. He's been playing very well. He's feeling good. You put a microphone and a camera in his face right now. Yeah, guys, yeah, I love it here. There's nothing like playing in the playoffs for the Boston Celtics.
And I also think there's something to be said for the whole idea of they're in the playoffs, and anything he says that even hints at the opposite creates a storm, right? It's the last thing any of them want now, including him. I don't think he wants that right now either. So he just, plays along. I'll say everything that you want me to say and everything you need to hear to keep this thing at a dull roar for a little while, and then when it's over, we'll make whatever decisions we got to make.
Okay, so Celtics on the board, along with everything else here on an agenda-free Friday. Back to your phones. As promised, we will get Kyle in Worcester is going to join us on Kyrie Irving on this very topic. Kyle, what do you got for us?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
How far do you think that Celtics have to go in the playoffs to have a chance of Kyrie returning?
So I said this yesterday, Kyle. They've got to contend, which means I think get to the finals and then win a game or two in the finals. I think just getting there, if they get to the finals and lose in four and just, are completely overmatched and uncompetitive, and the loss is so resounding that the last taste in Kyrie's mouth is still a bad one, I don't know if that does it. And certainly I think if you lose in the East, it doesn't do it. So I think they got to go to the finals and win a couple games at least and feel halfway decent about where they're headed. And I think Maz raised a good one yesterday. Gordon Hayward's got to play well. Gordon Hayward's got to play well, and he's got to show Kyrie that he can be a third guy or a second guy, but a third guy at the worst. And if it's going to be him, Anthony Davis, and Gordon Hayward has to be good enough to be that third guy. And if Gordon Hayward shows him that, I think that would help as well. But, I mean, I think the odds are he's going to New York, but it's not 100%. But you'll need that for it not to be 100%, Mavs.
Yeah, and look, I think Hayward factors in just about everything we've talked about in this segment. You're going to win on the road, I think Hayward needs to play well. You want Kyrie to come back, Hayward needs to play well. Like, there's got to be a Gordon Hayward sell job that goes on here over the next however many games they have left. And I think it's even more important on the road because, look, it's the old adage in the NBA, right? You're in your own arena. You're going to get the Terry Rozier's and the Jalen Browns and whoever else and Aaron Baines to give you some contributions. On the road, that's not going to happen. That's where your star players have to win the games, and Hayward needs to show that.
So the Kyrie thing, though, I mean, how can he be so good? 37 points, and you need you're this close to be down 4 points with under a minute left, and you should lose that game. So you tell if he can be that good, why are the Celtics still scraping off, just scraping one out against such a bad team at home, Maz? Explain that to me.
Well, because I think it takes more than the one guy. And I think when I say that, think of how good Pierce was all those years. And then, but the Celtics, they were bad. They're a bad team because as good as a player is, there's only so much he can do on the floor.
Yeah, but these Celtics aren't bad, but they're not bad.
Oh, okay. So you mean well, but I don't know how much help he really got the other night. So Tatum had a good game, but a lot of guys were missing shots still.
Yeah, Marcus Morris being one of them bombs
away. He's one of them,
yeah.
Murray.
I mean, that's one guy that can shoot any team back into a game.
And so, you know, what you got really is a, you know, I don't know if you put any stock into Horford being sick. Horford made one of the big plays of the game with that block.
His shot's off, though.
At the end. And so there's just not that many reliable guys, just, or they weren't on the floor.
It goes back to my thing. He just doesn't translate a lot. And so, like, they're better off if three guys go off. And Kyrie doesn't have 37, but he has 27. And Gordon Hayward's more of a factor. That's what makes him a better team. And is there something about the way that he plays that sort of gets in the way of that? I mean, I think that's – let's see how that plays out. All right? We continue with your thoughts here on Agenda Free Friday. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, Bruins Game Day on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Broadcasting live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, it's Felger and Mads. Bruins Game Day on your home of the Bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Matthews turns the corner, the ball fake, gets to the rim but misses in close. Horford has the rebound, another chance for Boston to take the lead. It's Kyrie, pull up, three, got it!
Man, good God almighty. That man, give him a mask because he just robbed a doggone bank.
All year long, he talked it. Tonight, he is walking it with his feet barely touching the ground.
It felt good to be here in this position, playing in this arena. You know, it's just been a long journey from having those two knee surgeries and watching the team last year and finally getting a chance to lace them up for the Boston Celtics in the NBA playoffs. It's nothing like it.
Welcome back to the program. Felger and Maz on Agenda Free Friday. Think Celtics fans were taking their pants off to that Murray the other night or what?
based on what I saw just on Twitter alone, yes. I know the pants came down quickly. It was, oh, he's coming back. See, he said it. You suckers.
I mean, he's a con man. He is such a con man. He really, and you know what? He's not even a good one. That's the thing. It's like, he says in the preseason, you know, my intention is to be signed with the Celtics if you'll have me. Tells everybody what they want to hear. A few months later, it's the complete opposite. Now it's roses and candy again. Like, it's just complete. He's so full of crap. It's unbelievable.
But that being said, he's smart enough to know what he's doing. Like, he knows how to play everybody, and that's why he did it. Because, again, he's in a good mood right now. Everything's going good for him. But again, this is the same guy who couldn't be bothered to show up for Game 7 Eastern Conference Finals last year because he had to go get a nose job. And this was one small thing I wanted to bring up going into this game that I liked seeing. Did you see how Marcus Smart is in Indiana tonight and is going to be for the next couple of games? Because Danny Ainge told him it was important that he be there to be on the bench and essentially coach from the bench. And he's doing it. He's banged up. And he said earlier this week it hurts when he sneezes. But he's going to be there. Where was Kyrie last year in Game 7?
Cosmetic surgery, Murray. He had the movie junket. He had a movie tour. He had interviews to do. He wanted to fix the old schnozzle before he did some interviews. So that's very telling. You know, for everyone who said, it doesn't matter if Kyrie's there, well, tell Danny Ainge that.
I was one of those people, and I'm an idiot for saying that, too.
Okay, Murray, thank you. So everything on the table. We talked about the ratings the other night. Bruins, obviously, tonight. Red Sox fighting for their season. All of it on the table. And the Kraft case, that video floating around out there. Ryan in Peabody, what do you got on Kraft?
Guys, love the show. Actually, Colin, when this story broke about Kraft, they said there was a lot of like high profile names, but the only name that you hear is Kraft. So who are these other people that, you know?
Sure, they're CEOs. Was ex CEO of Citibank? Is that who one of those was?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And a guy named Childs from Boston, who's a billionaire, who we don't care about. And I'm not even sure if those guys, and you know, with the Citibank guy might have been up north, might have been not even in Roberts County, might have been a different county, because there's three different things going on at the same time, which gets confusing. I have no idea about those guys. I don't care about those guys. If we, you know, for all I know, when a lot of these filings say, you know, Kraft and 14 other men are challenging the video, but Childs is probably on that list. I would guess he's on that list.
Yeah, I don't know. I still go back. I still think the thing was a little bit of a smokescreen to just kind of deflect at the beginning wherever it came out. And that all originates with that Adam Schefter report of that he was told there were two other names on the list that are bigger than Robert Kraft. Now, you know, that's a very subjective thing. I don't know. Would someone consider, you know, the former head of Citibank as being a bigger name than Robert Kraft? I wouldn't. So, you know, I just think the thing was a smokescreen.
We continue with your calls. Ben in Sutton on the Bruins. Hi, Ben.
Hey, guys. By your next show on Monday, the series will be in one of three places. Either the Bruins will have won, the Leafs will have won, or it's tied 1-1, and we're going to a Game 7. What do you think the most likely scenario is?
Seven.
Game 7. Yeah.
I mean, that's no guarantee. I'd love to see the Bruins sort of – I mean, so here's my path, but I'd love to see the Bruins do. Establish tonight, you know, slow the game down, get it on your pace in your sort of, you know, slow the game down. Just get more to your style of play. Win a game where it's you exert your will, as you should here tonight. And then go up there in game six and watch them crap their pants, because it means so much to them up there, and everyone's all through the roof up there, and the pressure is so much up there. And sometimes that can be a bad thing in your home building. Sometimes being home is not a good thing. And that, to me, is the path for the Bruins. That choke thing, Murray, has to start working in their favor. Because if it's just on the merits of the teams and the quality of the teams, they're dead even, and they're going to split these next game. The Bruins need a little help, and I'm hoping that choke factor up in Toronto comes into it.
Yeah, I definitely think that tightness thing would show up if the Bruins end up winning tonight and they go up 3-2. I said 6 going into this thing, and I know that, look, I didn't give Toronto enough credit just based on last year. They've been tougher. The goalie's been the better of the two goalies in this series thus far. But if the Bruins win tonight, yeah, I think that does come into play with the Maple Leafs.
So, Mike, when you say that they need help to win in 6.
Yeah, right. Yes, they need help to win in 6. If it's just neutral site, no other factors, pressure, things of this nature – they're just too even. They're going to keep going back and forth. And then Game 7 is a coin flip. I mean, it's been a coin flip as it is. And you've been better than Toronto the last couple of years. Toronto's better now. They've closed the gap with you. And so, you know, but to me, if it's just on the merits, the teams are too even. Michael in Milton wants to weigh in on the broadcast and the ratings that we were talking about before. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, so I was watching this thing on YouTube. It was Jack Edwards. He was doing like a guest spot in Canada. And I don't know if you guys can get the clip. He basically said that Bruins fans aren't qualified enough to be able to determine whether the Leafs are good enough to beat them. And then when they asked him about Tuukka Rask, he said that Bruins fans hold 2013 against him, giving up, you know, 2 goals in 7 seconds, and that we aren't necessarily qualified to determine whether he's a good enough goalie to make a Stanley Cup run. And I feel like as a Bruins fan, I mean, I'm not like, you know, watching every single game, but I feel like I can determine whether the goalie's good or whether,
so,
I mean, he's
Mike, yeah,
about, like, we're a bunch of idiots.
Right. So there's no point. I'm not going to attack Jack. I like Jack. I have no interest in ripping him, but that whole sentiment is not just from Jack. It's from all the guys that cover that team. They think you're stupid. I've said this a lot. This is my problem with Rask. It's not Rask himself. He's fine. He's good, not great. He's good. He's fine. My issue is how he's covered by the team, people that cover the team. There's this snobbery that takes hold where these people that cover the team say, well, I know hockey. You're just going to blame the goalie? You don't know hockey. And they think you're stupid. And that frustrates me, because there are times when Rask is not good enough. And I will say again, for the millionth time, he's not worth his money. He's not. There could be money better spent there. That doesn't mean he sucks. It's just, I need to see him carry you in the postseason before I say he's worth that kind of money. And I just think that's a factual statement. But the people that cover the team think you're an idiot if you blame the goalie, even though he may deserve it sometimes. That to me is frustrating.
Okay, so in Jack's defense, is he saying that people are stupid or just that they're emotional?
I don't know. I didn't hear the cut, so.
Okay, nor did I. But, I mean, like, I would say that oftentimes, as a fan, you're not really qualified. Because, you know, when you know, you're emotionally involved and you don't always see it straight.
Yeah. I think we can tell if the goalie's doing his job or not for the most part. We can. Tommy in Rhode Island, go ahead.
Hey, guys, I can tell the best thing about playoff hockey is Mike Emmerich, and there's your programming change right there. That's the difference between nothing and everything else. I would listen to Mike Emmerich call badminton in the Summer Olympics. I love hearing you think of him.
I like him. I think he's a little overrated. People, like, drop their pants for Mike Emmerich. And I don't know. He's good. I like his call. I like that he doesn't, you know, cry about refs. That's why I would watch the national broadcast over a local broadcast. He's not complaining about the officiating. But his call, I mean, I think people get a little carried away with Doc Emmerich there. Just a little.
Oh, I love him.
Me too.
Really?
I love him. What I love is the voice. I just think the voice is like, oh, it's perfect. I mean, you know, Murray, you got the pipes. I don't. Like, to me, that's what it is. It's just.
Oh, I think his emotion is real, too. He loves the game, and I think that pours out in his call. I've always loved him. I don't think you could overrate him enough.
Okay, so if we're doing that, then Jack Edwards should be your guy because he's tremendously passionate about the game and the team, and that passion comes through. And, you know.
I like Jack.
Give him.
I think
give him that.
He sometimes takes too much of a beating.
And I would agree with that. I don't like the officiating thing from any broadcast, not just him. The guy that will drive me from the NBC broadcast is Pierre. With where he went to high school, you know, where the guy played effing bantam and who his trainer was in junior high and then who he coached in college and then where he went for the U.S. national team and who his assistant coach was back when he was a peewee. And 2 minutes later, it's like, I don't care. What I stopped reading his bio. I don't care where the guy went to freaking high school.
Little Atkinson is so smart out of Riverside, Connecticut, Boston College, Avon Old Farms, and Mid-Fairfield Blues before he got to the NHL.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
Yeah, forget the Manitoba Moose Balls.
I don't care that they played junior together with the Manitoba Moose Jockeys. I don't care. I just don't care, Pierre. Here's Murray's update, and we're back with more.
Little Atkinson is so smart out of Riverside, Connecticut, Boston College, Avon Old Farms, and Mid-Fairfield Blues before he got to the NHL.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
From the center of the hockey universe, it's Felger and Mass. This is Bruins Game Day. Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
TJ, why has this video become the make-or-break issue for Robert Kraft in this case?
Well, besides the obvious that he wouldn't want a video of himself receiving services out there, the tighter issue is, it's the only leverage right now that the state has to get him to accept some sort of plea agreement. They've offered him a diversion deal, which would seal the case, seal all the evidence, expunge his record if he admits to certain conditions, including that he would have lost had this gone to court. He refuses to do that. As long as the video evidence is there, they have leverage.
Okay, that's TJ Quinn. And again, reasserting that if Kraft took that plea deal, the video evidence is sealed, and this is a non-factor. Now, the pirated stuff, that's a whole different story. That's really outside of the whole legal part of it, but the video is going to be released legally unless Kraft gets a judge or a ruling to say that it shouldn't be. So all that is still playing out. That's TJ Quinn on ESPN this week. Maz, I had a follow-up thought on the Bruins and something you read about. Patrice Bergeron, Maz?
Yeah, so again, Matt Porter in the Globe just pointed this out, and I didn't even notice it the other night, but he says Bergeron played 14:37 in Game 4. That was third among Bruins centers.
I was going to say, that's low.
Okay, so Charlie Coyle, who played 19 minutes, 18:57, and Krejci, who was 17:46, had greater workload. So again, Coyle, 18:57. Krejci, 17:46. Bergeron, 14:37 in the game. Now, he also had a two-minute penalty, if you remember, in the first period. He was called for interference. So if you want to say, well, that takes him off the ice for a little bit, fine, although you can't assume the whole 2 minutes, right? That said, he then adds a sentence, Bergeron has a well-documented history of playing through injuries. So I just wonder, and look, you know, this is the beauty of being Patrice Bergeron, right? If it's anyone else, we're kicking the crap out of him, and we're saying, why isn't this guy playing better? We see Bergeron have less ice time than Charlie Coyle. 4.5 minutes less than Charlie Coyle.
That is a crap ton.
And I'll do... It is, and look, all due respect to Charlie Coyle, who is a, you know, has had a good series. Coyle's been good. You want him out there 4.5 minutes more than Patrice Bergeron? No way. Like, I don't want anybody out there but Bergeron. So maybe there is something going on there with his health that we don't know about that at least partially explains why he doesn't look like himself in that series. And just to add, Mike, quickly, if there is something going on there, like, we're in the first round here. Like, to me, it's worth mentioning because... If you're gonna, you know, if you're gonna make a run, you're gonna need Bergeron. If he's already banged up, that's bad news.
There's no question that is something to keep in mind. And someone pointed this out to me on an email. Remember, it was one of the last games of the year. It was a meaningless game, maybe against the Rangers, and he jumped someone because he thought he got a cheap shot. Remember the guy sort of jumped backwards with his back and hit Bergeron in the head. It was sort of like a really weird check where the guy backed up into him. And Bergeron lost his mind, dropped his gloves, and started pounding him against the boards. The emailer wondered, did something happen on that play that made Bergeron not right? Those minutes are telling. That is, wow, 14 minutes for Bergeron. I didn't even notice that. That is low. All right, back to your phones. That's just one thing to consider here on a gender-free Friday, among everything else. Kevin in Easton on Kraft. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, my son has to say something. Hey.
No. We're not doing the sun thing. We're not doing that. His comment line, which I wanted to answer, was, how does Kraft repair his image? How does Kraft repair his image? Can I just go first with the answer quickly?
Yeah, sure. Go.
Let the calendar take care of it. The calendar takes care of most everything. Most everyone forgets about it. And especially this. Especially this. People would forget about it. They absolutely would. It's a bigger deal to you in your head than it is to the world at large. We've got... We have the attention span of a gnat. And... You know, it happens. If if it's over with, then it's over with, and it's a little side punchline here or there. But for the most part, the calendar takes care of it. That's what repairs his image.
Period. End of story. People shrug at mass murder now. This will go away. That's the only thing. Yeah, time will heal all wounds, as it normally does. But now it's, again, the attention span is even worse than it's ever been in human history. This is why he should have just copped to it initially, because it would have went away already, like a month ago.
I mean, it's true. We would have forgotten about it already. Here's the one thing I do know. Yeah, we would have forgotten about it already. The one thing I do know is that him getting the charges tossed or, you know, isn't going to affect anything. Like, people remember it now, and they were going to remember it no matter what, but this thing has only prolonged it. I think Murray's right.
We continue with Ethan. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's do Ibby and Woonsocket on the NFL draft. Go ahead, Ibby.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good, man.
I'm asking you guys a hypothetical question. If you were Big Bill and you had the first two picks in the draft, who would you pick on either side of the ball to help a Brady-led team win?
Okay, first two picks of the draft, they don't draft first two picks of the draft. Murray, just to help Brady, because I think that's where he was going to, just to help Brady, what should they draft? If their sole desire, I'm sorry, is to just get more out of Brady in his last couple of years, what should they do?
A wide receiver and a tight end. No, I mean, the tight end probably even more than a wide receiver at this point. Not that I'm trying to, you know, bank on Demaryius Thomas doing all that much for this team, but they need some depth there. But they certainly need someone that can give them a semblance of production that they would get out of Rob Gronkowski.
I'd take Nick Bosa. That's who I would take. I mean, you know, because, again, what we're going to stretch now for guys who would normally go at the top end of the draft, like at least this guy's going to go. He's on defense. I would go Bosa.
Agenda Free Friday continues. Everything on the board from the week, anything we've gotten to or have yet to get to, but we're going to really start rounding into Celtics tonight, Bruins tonight, Red Sox trying to save their season, all of that on the board with you right after this.
Live from the Star Market Broadcast Studio, Bruins Game Day on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Star Market Broadcast Studio. It's Felger and Mads. Bruins Game Day on your home of the Bees. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Chapman's 2-2. He struck him out at 99 miles an hour. A very, very painful loss for the Red Sox tonight. There have been a bunch of them early this season, but that may have hurt worse than any because the Red Sox had a pretty late lead and gave it away. Yankees wind up winning it. They take both games. They sweep the mini-series.
All right, fresh off a sweep in New York. Red Sox head to Tampa tonight against the first-place Tampa Rays. Murray, you're still worried about this Rays team, right? You think they're legit?
Yeah, they've allowed 49 runs. They've allowed the least amount of runs in Major League Baseball. They have their rotation's actually legit. And look, I know that Numbnuts there dropped a thing of concrete on his foot, so he's going to miss a start or two. The reigning Cy Young winner. Why am I dropping?
Blake Snell.
Blake Snell, thank you. But this kid that they actually got in the Chris Archer deal, who David Price is going up against on Sunday, is already 4-0. And he looks pretty good. The offense is legit, even though it's mostly no-names. If you look at the second half of last year, they still, again, they won 90 games, and they started with only like 3 wins in the first few weeks of last season. They're legit. That's a real team. Kevin Cash might be the best manager in baseball, right, and has been for the last, you know, season and a half here, or season and what we have so far. So the Rays, to me, are legit. And if you look not just at this weekend series the Red Sox have coming up with them, 6 of the next 10 games are against them. So even if you think that I'm being a little overdramatic and saying that the season's already done, if they get swept by them or they go 2-4 in those 6 games, how can you look at this right now and see how the Red Sox have been playing and that continued success of the Rays and see how far behind they'd be in the standings and not think, yeah, they're actually done. They're done. They'll find their way. They'll be more competitive. But making the playoffs, it's going to be a tough hill to climb.
Yeah, look, I'm not telling you that it isn't an important series for them, which is, it feels comical or downright stupid to even say that here on April 19th. But with the way they've been playing, like to me at least have to play well. Like at the very least play well. And then even then you say they need W's. They need wins. They need to sort of take some of the pressure off and get into a little bit of a groove. Because if it continues, and I don't think it's over on Monday, okay? I know you do. I know Felger does. If they have a bad weekend in Tampa, I don't think it's over.
If they get swept, it's
over.
They
got to be careful. So if they're not careful here, they're going to be buried by May 15th.
Couple of Red Sox thoughts here. Ethan and Worcester. Go ahead, Ethan.
Hey, guys. I was talking about the mess that is second base right now. You got two guys in Nunez and Pedroia who are basically duct taped together. Can't hit, can't throw. And I just hope that Lynn or Chavez lights it up so I never have to see Nunez or Pedroia again.
Okay. This was Maz's opening take, the second base situation.
So, look, I just think really to me it speaks to Pedroia. They just can't. They can't carry him. They can't. Now, he's on the DL again. But I look at it and say, I read in the Globe, you know, the good news is the injury's not major. Pedroia shouldn't be here at all. He's not the kind of guy you can carry and wait. This, given where they are, 6-13, what are they? In 10 days, he's going to want to play again? They're going to activate him? And what? He can only play second base every other day, and then they have to DH him and take a better hitter out of the lineup, whether it's Moreland or Pierce or Martinez or one of those guys? They just can't do it. They can't afford to carry this guy.
Paul,
so either if he doesn't, yeah, if he doesn't, I'm sorry, Mike, if he doesn't, if he doesn't start to play like the Pedroia of old, I think you just stick him on the DL and that's it.
Paul in Blackstone, sorry, go ahead, please, Red Sox.
Hey, what's going on? Listen, I want to talk to you guys about a take that you guys have dropped quite a bunch this season that I wanted to challenge you on. I've heard you guys say a lot that the reason that Mookie Betts got dropped from leadoff down to second base was because that he and or his agent pushed for it to up his RBI totals to increase his dollars. You know, arguing throughout the sports chatter with my buddy Chappie, he's challenged me on this a lot when I've said it to him that that's complete hogwash. So I would like to know, do you guys have a source for this? Is it something you cooked up straight out of your keister, or is it just something I can't find support on out in the internet?
Okay, I have zero basis for it, other than Maz brought it up and it sounded like it might be right. That's it.
100%. Oh, no, it's 100% keister stew. And completely out of my keister. 100% keister stew. Seriously, I mean, what do you want me to tell you?
I grilled it and threw it in the stew. It is a assy casserole. It's a Felger and Maz ass casserole. That's what that is. But I still think it might be true. I still think it might be true. And even if it's not the reason, I still don't like the move. You scored the most runs in baseball. You had the best run, the best offense in baseball with a leadoff hitter that won the MVP. So let's change it. That makes perfect sense. No, that's exactly what you should do. Have the best offense with the most runs. Your leadoff hitter is the driver for it, and he wins the MVP. So naturally, he should drop in the order, right? Like, who does that?
I think it
has to be something else.
So as you say it, I'll tell you what. If at this stage, I'm starting to think that if Betts asks for it, that's best case scenario. Because otherwise, it just validates what we've thought about them all along. They got so cocky, so sure of themselves. They said, oh, yeah, you know, we won 108 games last year. But you know what? If we move Mookie to the second spot, we'll be even better. Right? And remember, this was Alex Cora. I think it was at the baseball dinner when he said, you know, wait till this year. Remember that? Like, this whole thing is about, like, they just had one of the great years in Major League history, and they had the audacity to show up over the, you know, make changes over the winter that they didn't need to make, and then say, you think we were good last year, wait until this year comes. Tell me that isn't indicative of where they were mentally going into this thing.
Chris in Randolph with the Bruins thought. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, guys. Great show. Wondering your opinion on two things on Chara. If the Bruins win the cup, does he retire? And second, do the Bruins retire his number?
Okay, so yeah, no and yes. I mean, the way the Bruins are going, the Bruins are turning into the Celtics. With every other Jamoke gets his number up there in the rafters. So Chara's going up there whether he wins or not. And I don't think he's retiring no matter. He resigned for another year. I think he's one of these.
Yeah, just a month ago.
He's Brady. He's nuts. He wants to keep going. And like Brady, I think it's independent of how they do on the ice. I mean, if they start sucking, you know, if they're not a playoff team and his play drops way off, then that would drive him. But whether he wins or not is not going to be the driver. It's his own internal engine and his own internal motivation how long he wants to go. And I think Chara wants to keep going. And I think that's a good thing for the Bruins. I still think he's value add, especially now that, I forget what the contract was, but it was – something like $1 or $2 million. Like, he signed a wonderful contract for the Bruins. Just a tremendous team-friendly deal. So not as long as he wants to play for $1 or $2 million, he can stay as long as he wants, as far as I'm concerned. Drew in Brookline on the Celts.
Drew,
hold on one second. I'm sorry, Murray. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that guy must not have Instagram and seen the workout videos of the box jumps and the rope climbs and everything else. He ain't going anywhere anymore.
I could do the rope climbs.
No, you could not. Drew in Brookline on the Celts. Go.
So I wanted to touch on the Celts, but real quick, Tony Mez, can we at least give them 60 games before we start ripping into the Red Sox? I mean, you are unbelievable. I mean, you would probably jump up for joy the other night with Gardner hit that grand slam. I mean, is there a guy more happy in the New England area right now than you that the Red Sox is thinking? You must be, wow. But real quick, on the Celts, I mean, this is a big night. I mean, they could lose by 30, and it's like they're right back to where they were a couple weeks ago. You start to feel good about this team. You know, the other night was a feel-good win. Marcus Smart's on the bench, which gives Gordon Hayward more time on the floor, you know, along with Jaylen Brown. You know, they're getting their late-game baskets. Kyrie had his night. You know, it was a feel-good win.
Hey, Joe, just a little too much there. The big picture, I'll get back to Maz and the Red Sox in a second. The big picture take about if they get blown out tonight, they're right back where they started from, kind of. I agree with Maz. Like, if there's ever a time in a seven-game series where the outmatched team is going to win one, it's that game three when they're coming home. You know, and the league, again, this, if the league's ever going to step in, this is where the league steps in. Couple early fouls on a Celtics player, and you give Indiana one win, you give TV another night, and like the Celtics lose this one, like that's sort of the predictable, obligatory NBA extend a series game three kind of thing. If they also lose game four, if they lose both, then I'm with the caller. Then they're right back to square one. On the Red Sox thing, Maz, I love when you're blamed for our negativity. Murray has him dead. Murray has him done. Murray declared him done 2 days ago. I'm saying if they get swept, they're done. If they only win one of the three, I'll say they're still hanging on by a thread. So we're the ones that are burying them. You're the ones who are trying to keep them alive, and the caller still bashes you. I love that.
Right. No, it's just the way it works. You know, I understand. The reputation precedes me.
Shrapnel is what it is.
Well, it's part of the deal. I get it. I have said all along, give me May 15th. May 15th, and I'll let you know. And that said, you see, the caller has something else wrong. Was there anybody happier than me when Gardner hit one into the seats? And the answer is no, because I have to do a baseball show every night. So I don't want the Red Sox to suck, contrary to what people believe. What I do want is I want them humbled. And I think they've been humbled. I think we've gotten there. So that's the good news. It's not an easy game, and the season's a grind. If you think you're better than you are, it's going to suck. And so I think they've been humbled. I hope this is where it starts to turn.
Sox fighting for their season. Bruins Celtics tonight. The Kraft video floating around out there. Your calls on all of it after Murray's update. 90 seconds. No spots here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.